Hi, I'm Keith.
Hi, I'm Ragini.
And welcome to More Than Masala, a podcast where a chef and a culinary researcher talk about spices from the Indian subcontinent, from how to use them to sometimes the dark history behind their origins. Every episode, Ragini and I do a deep dive into one spice and talk about the history as well as how to use the spice. In this episode of More Than Masala, we interview somebody who is just so inspiring. From Podi Life, we have the amazing Alaknanda. She tells an incredible story of how Podi Life got started, the history of Podis, and most of all, the inspiration behind this incredible business. You're going to want to stay tuned to the end because the things that she says is just, oh, it's amazing. Let's get going.
Hi, Alok. How are you doing?
Hi, Ragini. I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you so much for joining us today. Keith and I are really excited to have you on the podcast and to learn about you and about everything about Podi Life.
And the pleasure is all mine. Hello, Keith.
Hey, I'm so excited you're here. It's always great to have incredible guests like you, and I just can't wait to hear your story.
Such an honor. Thank you for having me.
No, we're super excited. Okay, so let's jump right in. I won't spend time introducing you because I think you probably do it. You will tell your story much better yourself. So what we like to do is to kind of get to know everyone, you know, with and beyond the brand. So let's start with your background. Tell us a little bit about who you are and kind of the journey that took you to Podi Life.
Yeah, I think it's definitely very inspired by the life I've lived in a very long-winded journey, I would say. So I was born in this small city in India called Warangal. It's actually a cultural capital in the south of India, especially in the 12th to 14th century. It had it was a capital of this dynasty called the Kakatiya dynasty. And the reason why I talk about this is because I love history. I'm a history buff. And I think, like, you know, that really also comes through with what I do with Podi Life. The city has temples that were built in like 1163, and there's a massive like Kali temple that was built in the 7th century. There is a lot of folk traditions around agriculture. There's actually one festival that celebrates Podis, and I'll talk about that a little more. But that's something I grew up with, you know, and I left the city when I was 7 years old. We moved to a bigger city called Hyderabad, also in the south of India. And also it was really in the pursuit of better quality education for me and my brother. My family has a massive agricultural background. They've always had rice farms and rice. They have a small rice mill. So my dad was the first one to sort of like, you know, leave that city and move out into a bigger metro. From Hyderabad, we immigrated to the US twice, once in the late 90s, so in 1998, and then the second time in 2005. The first time when I immigrated to the US, it was a massive cultural shock. And I was in middle school, I was a shy, introverted kid. It was quite the shock. And I think that also informs a bit of the work that I do with Podi Life. I feel like there's a lot of, you know, coming to terms with my dual identity of sort of having that Indian heritage and also I very strongly identify as an American now. So there's sort of, you know, coming to terms with both of those parts and building this community with Podi Life has been quite incredible in terms of coming to terms with that dual identity. I moved to the U.S. in 2005 at the second time, went to undergrad in Austin, Texas. I was quite the nerdy, geeky kid as a teenager. I think all of my 20s, I sort of just spent that, exploring, I would say. So I studied chemical engineering. I studied economics. I was super active during my undergrad years, kept myself very busy. I also had, you know, I was on a work study scholarship. I had to work like 20 hours a week and have this full course load. And also, I think I kept my ties with India quite close during those undergrad years, as exploratory as I was. Some of the organizations that I was part of were there's this one organization called Association for India's Development. And they were, you know, I was quite active with fundraising for activists who do a lot of grassroots work, you know, like the Narmada Bachao Andolan. Or there's also a hospital that I used to raise money for. It's in rural part of Chhattisgarh called Janaswasthya Sahyog. So I think like those activities also helped me with staying up to date with what's going on at a more grassroots level, whether it's with agriculture or healthcare. I was also volunteering with this organization called Engineers for a Sustainable World. And we used to go to these farms outside of, you know, in the outskirts of Austin and help out with some farm work there, you know, cutting fresh vegetables and helping with the small scale farmers who are there. My undergrad years, very fascinating. You know, I was this kid, you know, coming from India. I was part of a university, which means I could not only study one discipline, I could study so many disciplines. So I was taking classes in, like, you know, I took a class in linguistics and astronomy. I was studying like medical etymology from Latin languages. It was just, I was fascinated. You know, being in university was an incredible experience. I was able to do my internships in the oil industry, and that helped me sort of like pay off for my education. I volunteered with this one, actually, no, it was a summer internship. Yeah, with this organization called the Earth Institute. They are part of Columbia University, and they work towards the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So it's part of their health program, and that helped me with really understanding like how do healthcare systems evolve in different countries, especially developing countries, and sort of the comparing and contrasting between those. And oftentimes what I just kept realizing was healthcare, education, and food, they're like so interrelated when it comes to developing countries. And that's the theme that just kept coming back to me. So after undergrad, I started working as a management consultant at a small boutique firm. Also was still working, you know, in the sort of the pharma healthcare space, because that was a fascination I had with that industry. And then 2 years into that, I had a pretty serious medical sort of condition that I was diagnosed with. I had pulmonary embolism. So I was hospitalized for a short time, which is, it's basically blood clots in your lungs. And sometimes, I mean, the doctor's diagnosis was probably it came from like a long haul flight. But, you know, I was hospitalized for a short while. And then once I got out of it, I really wanted to do more about, more in the space of like rural healthcare in India. So the rural hospital that I was fundraising for through Association for India's Development, I went to that hospital. It was in a small village in Chhattisgarh. The village is called Ganyari. It's outside of Bilaspur. And I spent a couple of months in that village. And, you know, just understanding the state of rural healthcare in India, you realize how much of a disparity there is in, like, all of my knowledge of healthcare of India was very theoretical, right? And you know, I was in this village, just observing what kind of food people eat. How does that affect nutrition? How does that affect nutrition of young mothers? And access to healthcare in general. I think understanding systemically. What it's like, what causes poverty, what is livelihood like for people like this, that was a big sort of a shock to me as someone who grew up in a city. You know, I felt very out of touch with that part of India, right? But that's also a pretty large part of what India is like. It's almost like 70% of India is sort of in that state, right? And I came back from that experience as pretty jaded. It was also the year, this was 2012-13. It was also the year when I got my American citizenship. So I was, you know, it was the year America and I officially adopted each other. So that was another big sort of a moment for me, because I was dealing with this, like, am I American enough? Sort of a question. I think that's something a lot of recent immigrants tend to feel, right? There's sort of like this insecurity and sort of like this, dealing with imposter syndrome almost, right? Of
resonate with that.
Yeah, of being an American. And my big way of sort of dealing with that was, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I need to see more of the US. I need to understand the US. I need to understand like the people of the US, because I had this experience in India. Now I felt like, okay, like I think I understand India better, and I wanted that same thing with the US. So that year I did this like fundraising bike ride. I biked from the East Coast of the US to the West Coast of the US. So from Baltimore to Seattle, it was 4,400 miles across 70 days. And we were biking. It was with a group of people, a group of young people that I did this with. We were all in the ages of 18 to 25. It was a fundraising bike ride as well. So I was able to raise like $6,000 to $7,000. And it all went towards this fund. It's called the Ullman Cancer Fund for Young Adults. So this, you know, the money goes towards young adults who've been affected by cancer in some way. That year also, like, my maternal aunt passed away from complications from breast cancer. So it was sort of personally, it was just a very impactful journey for me to go through so many small towns in the US. And, you know, and we were staying in churches, like, church congregations had opened up their facilities basically for us to like stay there. And it was a fully fundraised ride. So we were going to restaurants, small town restaurants, to ask for donations, food donations, where we could stay, where we could take showers. We were literally just traveling around with our bicycles and with our two vans, two SAG vans. And it was fully supported by all of us, like the 28 of us that were riding. We were taking turns doing this. So getting to see the US from that perspective just made me realize how universal all of us are in just as humans, you know, just I think we all care about the same things. We all, I don't know, it was an incredibly, it made me feel so much more as just, you know, like we think we harbor so much around the questions of identity, but also the universality of that experience just made me feel like, okay, you know, I am American, whatever shade of American I am, I'm really happy with that. Like that was sort of like what I felt towards the end of my journey. And experiencing that it was a pretty big milestone in my life, I would say. And then, after that incredible journey, came back to being a techie, joined like a healthcare tech firm. And from there, I moved to Europe I moved to Germany for love, basically. And this was 2014. Yeah, 2014, basically. And then I lived in Germany, I lived in France, I got my MBA in France, and that was, and again, another incredible experience, right? Because I think France has such a rich culture around food. They take so much pride in the food that they make. Like if you go and talk to small scale, like cheesemakers or winemakers, the kind of passion that they show with what they do for the craft, for their art, it's just incredible. And that was super inspiring. And that definitely, you know, fed into what I feel with Podi life and like with Podi's. And, you know, through all of these different journeys, my mom used to constantly send me Podi's, you know, wherever I went. Like during the bike ride, we had three stops where we could get care packages from our families. Of course, there were Podi's in that, you know, like, and just at every point of time, like the years that I lived in Europe, there would always be Podi's in all of my care packages. And it was so much that like my friends would ask me for these and I would like make those. I mean, I didn't know how to make them really, but I learned the recipe and I would never be able to really quite match up to her Podi's.
So for our listeners who may not be aware, can you just describe what a Podi is and why, when you talk about it, you kind of talk about it like as a category as opposed to one thing? So can you just explain that to us a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So podis are podi in all the four major South Indian languages, right? Kannada, Telugu, Tamil, and Malayalam translates to powder. And this is it is a powder form seasoning, and sometimes it's also a spice blend, but it's almost for, you know, for the 250 million or so South Indians, it's almost like an emotion, you know, like eating podi is an emotion. So podis, if I have to really put it in layman terms, I would say they're like dry sauces, you know, so they're sort of an ingenuine, like indigenous invention, I would say, that took the ingredients that are grown, like, you know, all of these things that are grown in the area, which is lentils, peanut, coconut, spices and herbs. And they've created condiments that can be very easily used with, let's say, you know, you can just mix it in rice and eat it with rice. It's a dry sauce, like how you would make pasta and put tomato sauce on it. You can just mix podi with rice. You can also just put it on vegetables. You can cook with it. So it's a seasoning that sort of stood through time. It's been around for, I would say, you know, for at least 2000 years or so. So definitely an old tradition that has stayed in the area. And it's almost, and I'm actually quite surprised that it's not available. You know, it's not more popular than I guess in South India it is, you know, in South India, every home has their own sort of podi formula. It's sort of like the house chili crisp or the house kimchi. And every family sort of has their own podis. So that's what podis are.
I want to jump in for 2 seconds because you're telling this amazing story. And so let's get the listeners on this journey with you. So you're biking across America, and you said there was these stops in which families could send care packages and your mom would send these podis. Which is so cool. How did you go from that to in the business of podis?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of moments in my life, I would say, that sort of just like, I mean, now that I think back, you know, I think like, okay, these were definitely moments that just went into my subconscious and told me that I need to be like doing this. But really the last push came when I was in India in 2020. So in 2020, after my years in Europe, I was in India because there was a very exciting opportunity to work with a small solar company in India. So I was there. And then pretty much 2 months after I moved to India, and, you know, I was trying to live in India also after 17 years of not having lived in India, right? So that was already a pretty big thing. And 2 years in, the COVID, like pandemic hit, right? So We were at home. My job was supposed to be something in business development, which is a very high contact sort of a job. So everything sort of came to a standstill. And turns out, you know, I was living in the house, the same house that I grew up in India. And my mom was with me as well. So we were both in the same space that, you know, like that I grew up in. But we were living as like roommates, two adults, instead of like, you know, like that mother-daughter relationship. We were constantly having conversations around personal space and like food. And we're talking about all of these things. And it was incredible. I think the more and more we talked a lot about like, what were the foods that you grew up with? What is your, you know, what were you, when you think of your mom, like, you know, these are questions I would ask my mom. Like, when you think of your mom, like, what foods come to your mind? And sort of connecting around like the heirloom articles that we had also in that same kitchen. Like, there's this, you know, like there's this 3 kilo stone mortar and pestle that we never like, you know, we never got it from India to the US. And that's still there. So some of these things really sparked a lot of conversation around food habits, but also around dreams and hopes. You know, like my mom would tell me, like, this is like, sometimes, you know, she's always just feels like, oh, my life, like, you know, I didn't get to like do much. I didn't get to do this. I didn't get to do that. And I would be like, but you're so talented. Like, you know, I can't believe that you feel this way. You're so talented. You're such an incredible chef and you're such an incredible cook. You have such an, you know, so just all of these conversations helped a lot in talking about podis and how much they mean to me. And we just wanted to share podis with everyone. So we ended up starting like a small project where we were selling podis in India. And we sent about about 300 orders or so across India, but like to different parts of India, right? To areas where people had never heard of puris, like, you know, Nagaland. Like we had a couple of orders from like the Northeast and Manipur, Mizoram. So from so many different parts of India, and getting feedback from all of these people who didn't grow up with it, because again, this is such a, every family has their own recipe. To share this was such a joy. So we did that. My mom traveled back to India once, you know, travel opened up. I ended up staying there and continuing this till the end of December of 2020. And then, you know, I was at a crossroads for, you know, do I want to continue doing this here? Do I want to be closer to family as we ride out this pandemic? And, you know, I took the decision to sort of, yeah, move to the US and start this little business here.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. What's really interesting is a common theme I'm seeing, you know, in speaking to folks who have started companies that are spice blends specifically, you know, whether it's you describe it as a sauce or anyone, you know, the other interview that we did around someone who does spice blends is this focus on women who have such incredible talent, and more often than not, it is women because their cooking talent is, you know, most often in the knowledge of their family and maybe their friends, you know, and then what you're doing with your mom, which is incredible, and what Geniali is doing kind of with a number of women who have one particular thing they make really well is bringing that into the limelight. And I think, you know, this kind of romanticization of the woman in the kitchen who just cooks for her family, there's no reason that can't interact with the public sphere, you know? And absolutely. And even when you were talking about there are so many puris, every house has like a particular puri recipe. And yet when you go to buy puris, even in India, you get gunpowder, right? Like that's what you get in the market. So for me, actually, the first time I discovered how much variety there is in puris is when I was looking on your website. So could you talk us through, like, you know, what are some of the varieties you have? Did you grow up eating all of those varieties of puris, or did you guys do a bunch of recipe testing to, you know, create a product line? Like, how did you come to that process?
So yeah, I think the 6 months that we were in India, right, we started off with five puri flavors. So there was the gunpowder one, and then there was curry leaf, coconut, peanut, and gunpowder, and mint. Yes. So these were the five that we started with, and these are definitely ones that I grew up with. And then we added the nutty mung, which is mung bean, the green mung bean with the husk. We roast that, and so that's the big base in that puri. And that definitely came out of having sort of a deeper conversation with my mom, because that's something she grew up with, but she never really made it for us because I guess somehow it sort of like fell through the cracks. And then she ended up, you know, remembering that memory of making that. And so I loved it. And the first time she made it for me, I really loved it. And I said, no, we've got to add this to our roster, you know? And there were some flavors that we added from customer feedback. Actually, someone, you know, asked us, oh, is there a garlic one? Can you make a garlic one? And I was like, Ma, like, you know, can you make a garlic one? And she ended up making one. She like experimented like different combinations. And now that's one of our like big like sellers, actually, like one of, I would say probably are actually our best seller. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of like that people asking us. And then us also trying to figure out if we can scale it, you know, like I think sesame is another one. I would love to add a sesame one, but sesame is just super labor intensive, I would say. And also I think it's just much harder to make on at scale. So it's sort of like the balance between what I grew up with, what people are asking for, and what can we make at scale. So that's sort of how we've decided, like, you know, what flavors to have. So, and of course, there's a sambar puri and rasam puri, which are a lot more spice heavy rather than lentil heavy or, you know, or nut heavy, right? Like the peanut and coconut one, nut heavy. Mint and curry leaf they have a lentil base. I almost talk about it like it's a perfume, actually. You know, there's like this base flavor coming from lentils, and then there's this middle note coming from the spices, and then there's the really like big note that really that you know that you smell when you smell it. The top note is the herbs with like the curry leaf or the mint, right? So that's really how I think of it.
Yeah, I think the garlic one is, it's so good. Like I think I inhaled the bag. The mint one, I was really surprised by. That's something I wouldn't even have thought that mint would be like a predominant flavor in a puri. I was like, really? Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. And so you have all these flavors. Firstly, it's amazing. Listen, you're like, hey, Ma, can you just create a poti out of this, please? No worries. Just go into my kitchen. Like, that's incredible. Like, just the sheer skill to be able to do something like that. It's not a joke. Like, you know what I mean? Exactly. Like, that's incredible. So you talked about sesame being potentially labor intensive and like more difficult to make, but you know, we'll get to the market in terms of visibility and accessibility to poris, mm-hmm. you know, in general, but let's talk a little bit about like, you know, what you're creating. It is ultimately a perishable product, and it's also a product that where you are, not a very large number of people know about. So mm-hmm. how do you kind of balance those two things? How, like, what are there any decisions that you had to make that were, I don't know, interesting or difficult kind of around creating a perishable versus adding preservatives to it and creating something else?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, when you have a mom who's sort of like in charge of the quality of puris, like the quality of the question of perishables, like, you know, the question of preservatives never really comes to the picture. She's just like, no, we gotta have, like, if we can't eat it at home, we cannot sell it. You know, that's sort of how she is. And I love that, right? I love the approach that she takes. And I really do think that's how food should be as well. Or rather, I wouldn't be very proud of you know, selling a product that has preservatives in it. So that's I think that's a big ethos that we definitely go with. So yes, it is a perishable product, but I think it's also shelf stable, because again, you know, for years and years, this was sort of how people used, you know, peanuts or coconuts in the South, you know, like by putting them in puri form. You can literally make a box of puris and have it on the shelf for like 2 to 3 months and you'll be really fine, you know. And if you store it in the fridge, it's even longer, right? You can keep them fresh for a very long time. In fact, like when we were leaving India, we had a couple of very like early customers who bought a ton and kept it in the freezer, and they would just open it. And now, you know, she's a friend, and she messaged me recently, and she's like, I'm on my last bag, like I'm almost done, and it's almost been a year, you know. But she really kept it in the freezer, and she pulled it out whenever she wanted to use it. So you can really stretch their freshness, definitely. It is perishable, but at the same time, like I said, it's fairly shelf stable. So that's a good, like, I think just by feature of the product, just how it's always been. In terms of, yeah, like being in a market where people don't know about it all that much, there's definitely an education piece. I feel like that needs to happen. But, you know, like I said, I think there's also a universality to it, because every time I traveled and, you know, when I was living in Europe, these were things I definitely shared with my friends and they would love it. So the flavors themselves, they're fairly universal, right? Like peanut, coconut, or whether it's the lentil base. I think it's more the form in which it comes that people don't know all that much. But that's sort of the piece that, and it's on me to sort of, you know, like sort of educate. But I feel like a lot more people are talking about it, so which is fantastic. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just gonna ask this second question that came to mind, unsurprisingly. So what are some of the things that you're doing to you know, sort of grow awareness around what a puri is, and like, and even like, if you could tell us how we could access those things, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I think what we do with sort of the brand, right? Like the cards that we have, the pairing suggestions that we give.
Okay, wait, actually, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. Can you talk a little bit about those incredible illustrations that come with your poties and design them, and like, yeah, just describe those a little?
So cool.
Yeah. They're absolutely awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So, Well, you know, so at the end of my time in India, towards the end, when I was like, okay, yeah, I think I want to do this in the US, one of the big questions, like all of the questions that you're asking me now, right? Like those were definitely the questions I had, because I'm like, in India, I don't need to explain what podis are. But when I'm in the US, I definitely need to explain this. And you know, I'm gonna take this back a little bit to my time during the MBA. One of my favorite parts of the MBA was this is exercise that we did as part of a module called Personal Leadership Development Program. So the exercise was, you know, take a large piece of paper and like you have to draw what your dreams, hopes, and fears are. And I literally drew, like, you know, there was this like background of mountains and a lot of little kids, you know, stick figures of everything, and like, you know, all of us like just out in the nature doing things. So for me, a dream has always been to sort of like be a teacher or be something that's related to early education. Like I love the Montessori and Waldorfian philosophies of schooling. I have a friend who is in early education. I love children's books. So like every bookstore that I go to, like I hang out in the children's book section all the time. So this love that I have for, I think children's books are some of the most incredible pieces of literature there are. I think it takes a lot of effort to simplify a big topic into something that a child can understand. And so when I was thinking about, okay, introducing podis to in a market where people don't know podis, that definitely like came back to me, you know, like, okay, so I want to take that route of children's books, what children's books do. So I got so lucky. I found this incredible person. Her name is Aryama. She designs book covers actually for children's books. So I didn't know this at the time, but she did this really cool Instagram series called Friday Food Monday, where there was this whimsical like little girl playing around with like food ingredients, but she was like a thumbelina, you know, like that scale. So I love that. I love what she did with that. And I was like, no, that's what I need to do. Like, that's what we need to do with podis, you know, sort of bring people closer to the ingredients of each podi and sort of the story that we have with each of the different podis, sort of bring that into a visual form. And then, you know, make that as the entry point for them to understand like where we're coming from. Also, I think visually you can say so much more than you can with words, right? So that was really the thinking behind creating this card for each flavor. What do we want to highlight in each flavor? How do the ingredients look? And of course, like, you know, the agricultural sort of heritage that I have, I wanted to bring that into the cards, talk about like how does a peanut look under the ground, you know, like, you know, our peanut podi card has like the yellow flowers that, you know, or that grow on a peanut. It has the actual like roots and everything on a peanut, and it has in the background there's a peanut farm, same with the coconut. So we did a lot of that thinking and came up with like these illustrations for each of the different flavors, and behind these cards we have pairing suggestions for how to use the podis, and these are tested and tried sort of flavors, I mean, pairing suggestions that I've come up with. But more and more with time, as people are starting to use them, so many people come back and tell me, oh, this is how I use it, that is how I use it. So there's definitely a version two that is coming up. But yeah, that was the thinking behind educating people around putties.
It's such a great way to do it. Such a clever and effective way to do that. Because when you're absolutely right. When you look at something, you know, a picture tells a thousand words, isn't that what they say? So that's, I think, the perfect approach. So let's, to sort of wrap up, why don't you tell us, you know, today you're based out of Atlanta, is that right?
That's right.
So today you're in Atlanta. Where would you like to see Podi Life grow in the future? How, you know, what's on the cards for Podi Life? And also, if people wanted to find you, where could they find you? How can they order? And Keith and I highly endorse this product, and we encourage all of you to order all of them. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I love that you guys love it. I love that you've you know, gotten a chance to try them and enjoy them. So future plans for Podi Life, well, you know, I'd love for everyone to know what podis are, everyone to sort of like I want us to be sort of like the brand that people think of when they think of puris, just because I think I love puris, you know, and I want that to be, I want it to be a seasoning that sort of like stands to the test of time, but also is known globally. And it's not just like this gem that South India knows and that every family sort of knows, you know, so I want everyone to know it and enjoy it. And you can find us on www.purilife.com. Puri life, because puri is life, you know. It's like I said, it's truly an emotion for South Indians. It's but I love the fact that they're such a versatile condiment and they can be used in so many ways. So yeah, so that's sort of like the small plan that we have for now, at least, is sharing puris with everyone.
I love that.
I do too. And having had the products, I mean, puris are just incredible. You guys do such a good job. We're both really, really big fans. So if you're listening to this and you don't follow Puri Life on social media, what are you doing? Go follow them right now, because all of their stuff is incredible. And go spend some money and support this incredible business. Thank you so much for being here. It's such an honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Keith. And thank you, Ragini. This was so incredible.
Thank you. This was really fun. And sitting in Bangalore, I am definitely dreaming of puris that are made in the US right now. So, fair enough.
Mission accomplished.
Well, thank you, Ella. Thank
you. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll be back with More Than Masala, our next episode. Stay tuned. Like I said, rate us 5 stars always, because Ragini, let's face it, we deserve it, right?
I think so.
We'll see you guys soon.
See ya.